begin with a prayer. O Heavenly Father,
Divine Mother,
Friend Beloved God,
Great Masters
of Self-Realization,
Jesus Christ,
Babaji Krishna, Lahiri Mahashai,
Shri Teshwar,
Paramahansa Yogananda,
Blessed Mother,
Dear David,
Beloved Saint Francis,
lovingly we invoke your presence
into this space,
into my heart,
and into my mind.
O beloved Lord,
I gather the flowers of my devotion,
and lovingly offer them
on the altar of my love for thee.
My listening mind waits in silence.
While my soul softly opens in prayer.
To receive thy light.
Gradually I am enfolded.
In thy arms of everlasting bliss.
Suddenly I realize.
I am not this body.
I am not this mind.
I am not this soul.
Thou hast absorbed these
in thy eternal flame.
I am forever
one with thee.
Om.
Peace.
Good morning and happy Sabbath, everyone.
It's an auspicious Sunday, sandwiched as it is between Master's Mahasamadhi and Sri Yukteswar's Mahasamadhi, which is tomorrow. And so why don't we take this opportunity to feel the two masters sitting on each side of us right now and with closed eyes. Let's focus on opening ourselves to their presence with us this morning. Feeling what it is to sit with them, to sit next to them. Perhaps it makes us sit up a little bit straighter. Perhaps it comes as a feeling in our own heart of connection and of love. Perhaps it is in the clarity of our mind and of our singular purpose to focus on God. Let us each make our own offering inside of our own altar of our hearts now. Let us offer ourselves to the Masters, that we be made instruments for thy purpose in this life.
releasing all distractions, all obstructions which keep us from the calmness, from the sweetness of the Holy Presence. Quiet talk with the master. It's called Bring Your Burdens. This day I would bring you a new message which contains a key to many things. I have told you how you must learn to talk to me. As you come each morning in quiet humbleness to the door of the golden throne room of your heart, the door swings wide for you, and you enter as a weary pilgrim, carrying dust-covered burdens that you have gathered along life's highway. As you kneel before my presence on the throne, take from your heart one by one these burdens. Some shall seem almost too small and trivial to have made so large a bundle, and so recently acquired that you wonder at its weight upon you. Others you may have carried long, and these will be bound by the very fibers of your heart. But never fear. They are all burdens in my sight. Anything, no matter how small, that fetters the soul must be taken from your shoulders. So give them all to me. Talk them over with me. Say, my Lord and King, this may seem small, but it bothers and hinders me. Take it, that I may be free. And then as these burdens, whether great or small, are given over into my keeping, they shall immediately be consumed by the holy fire on my altar, and you shall stand straight and free in my presence. You entered the throne room through a wide open door as a mortal carrying a heavy burden, and when you leave, the door remains closed, and you go out a free spirit. No burden can go through that closed door into the outer again, and the fragrant incense of my altar fire will cling to your garments, and you shall all day walk among your fellow men with the signs of my presence upon you. Go forth free. Say, if not now, then when? I'd like to ask Peony to lead us in some chanting as she's ready.
begin with a reading. This is a talk by Master from May 5th, 1946. It's unedited, so you'll have to bear with me if I get caught up in some sentences here and there that don't quite make sense, but I think regardless it'll be worth it. What better way to feel Master's presence than to tune in directly to his words? It is best to lead a simple life, a life that is independent of this terrible mechanism called society. It is best to live simply. We have to go back to the land. The more we go back to the land and live simply, the happier we will be. And just enough clothing to meet the demands of society, that is all. Your real health is what is important, and above all, good company. Good company is greater than anything else. It is the sunshine of God. Good company reflects God. I would rather live under a tree, with a few good souls, and with a few crumbs, than in a palace, with a chain about my neck, and people who would flatter me. That is not for me. So, simplify your life. Live simply. Laugh at the world. Don't go into the machine of the world. It is too exacting. It destroys the nerves. By the time you get what you are seeking, your nerves are gone, and the heart is leaking. Bones aching. Have happiness now. If you have that, you have everything. Live to be happy, content. Simplify your life. Ignorance is the greatest source of our diseases. Disease and health mean nothing to you if you understand life. And if you are one with God, all your fears and illusions are but the figment of the divine imagination, which is suggesting to your consciousness disease and limitation. To be with that perception is the greatest source of happiness. As soon as you go in to the money-making machine, you will see you have become a slave. No peace, no happiness, fear. When you come in the spiritual path, you change. Those that I have to speak too much to, I don't like to mix with. I like to talk with the eyes. In a hermitage, everybody should be willing, and then there is peace and happiness. That is the way life should be. Above all, be so peaceful that nobody can get your goat. Keep your airplane of peace, led by the beam of God's peace. Then you will reach your destination. By the time you think of all the health laws and all the worries, you won't have time. So concentrate on God so that you won't have time for anything else. Be so busy with God that nothing can disturb you. When you love God and work for Him and feel that you are helping others, you don't think you are working at all. This is His world. It is not your world. Why should you have your own desires? Then, when the time will come for you to leave, you will be crying. Just say, "This is your world, Lord." And then happiness will come. As soon as you work for yourself, then you will have no end of trouble. As I often say, I killed Yogananda long ago. That state is the real state. So many people in the spiritual path are constantly suffering because they don't obey simple laws. The simple laws.
Master always used to say that meat rots in the system, but vegetables will grow. Learn self-control about meat, and you will see it will be to your benefit. After 35, you cannot afford to transgress. Exercise more. Be in the sunshine more. And above all, feel the presence of God. Say, this is your dream. I am above health and disease. That is the greatest thing. But until then, if you obey the laws, you will find that will help you to attain that freedom. Some people have no ambition at all. They are dull about everything. This is dullness of the mind. And some are so spiritual that they have no interest in anything. You must have creative ambition. But don't bother too much about food, and follow the right diet laws and forget about it. Keep the mind busy with God. Dullness is that you have no interest in anything. Very few people have the desire to be creative, always taking a back seat. But your mind must be keen. To the keen mind, God explains himself. And then there is doubt. If you are all the time with God, all these impediments don't mean a thing. You can't keep a good man down. He who keeps you down is your own doubt. As I have said, if I haven't a job, I would shake the world until it would give me one, just to keep me quiet. Lots of this you don't get because you don't ask for it. If you take a back seat and wish God to work for you, you won't get anywhere. Remember, you must remember that God is within you. Never doubt his presence. Never think he is partial to anybody. You have lots to live for, and realize your opportunities, and don't doubt. That is why Christ again and again told the value of faith. Yet some people are habitual doubters. How several people can get in a room and will instantly see the defect, while another will see the beauties. There are some people who only see the faults in others, but we should see always the good. The more you see good in people, the more you will be with God, because one key is bad. Does that mean the whole piano is bad? Some people have deceived you, so you don't trust anybody. But doubt is suicidal. But constructive doubt, it is all right. Constructive doubt is doubting only to find out the truth. But destructive doubting is habitual doubting. If you say, I doubt God, then what can he do for you? Doubt finishes you. It is suicidal. It is destructive. Maybe I can do it. Maybe. I will is better. Doubt is very destructive. It paralyzes your will. As long as you have life, you have hope. So never give up. Even on the last day when you are passing, even if your life, whole life has been a failure, and still you say, God, I will never give up, you will positively find God. That stone of doubt has kept your inner chamber of life dark. But as soon as you say, I know you will help me, then he can't miss you. Where can the wave go except in the ocean? Where can you go except back to God? I may have desires, but what of it, Lord? I am yours. Behind every little wave there is the ocean. After doubt is gone, you see God in every phase of your life. no matter what happens, you have to get back to God. Why should you doubt? What doubt keep you away from God? Have complete faith in the Spirit. The only thing to doubt is doubt itself. Even Christ doubted Peter. Again and again he said, "Dost thou love me, Peter?" He wanted to dispel his doubt. Faith is proof of things unseen. It is not dogmatism. To have faith in God is to find happiness. I never found happiness until that faith came. I used to reason things out, and I became lost in the forest of reason. But when I had faith in Guru, I found God. He was the one person I never criticized. Study faith. That is what Jesus again and again emphasized. Simple faith in God, that you are living in His presence, and that He has called you in this work and brought you to your Guru. Because God doesn't talk to you direct, He sends you a Guru through whose life He teaches you. Without that, you will never find God. If you follow your own limitations, your weak mind will be your guru and will lead you from one mistake to another. But if you follow someone who loves God, you will quickly learn to love God. He who loves God will never take that love for himself. And those who are receptive, it is easier for the guru to establish God in their temple. Jesus said, "Be ye fishers of men." That is very significant. To give food to the hungry is good. To give mental power is greater. But to give God is the greatest of all gifts. When you find souls and plant them in the devotion to God, and woe unto them that destroy that devotion. Anyway, why should you doubt? When you look at the tree, you don't know how it came to be. This itself dispels all doubt. Look at those flowers. Certainly those flowers didn't create themselves. Right away you know that something is working there. But you have to make him talk. He is silent. Shell after shell of yearning I throw at the ramparts of thy silence, and they broke away. Such is the light of God. There is no love like that. You will be in with love, its love with love itself, and you will drink his love from the chalice of all hearts. You will have nothing other, no other thought, nothing but him. Doubt is like an old lady who sees nothing but wrong in the world, because she has a demented mind. It is the static in the mental radio. Doubt shows a lack of intelligence. To doubt God is insanity. We didn't create ourselves. You cannot afford to doubt God. What is the mechanism of sleep and wakefulness? You don't know. How did you get this power to think? And where does the consciousness go when you sleep? When you understand these things, you cannot doubt God. Things don't happen of themselves. We are radioelectric mechanisms. We are being directed by the great dynamo. So why should you doubt? It is so foolish. So many people are intoxicated with doubt that they have forgotten God. I think I'll stop there. I picked up this talk last night. I was pleasantly delighted
to see how it was such a natural continuation of our topic from last week, which was growing faith like Peter. And here we have Master really letting us hear it about that pesky little stone of doubt that in truth lives in each one of us until we have completely overcome this in our own happiness in God. I've been reflecting this week on a few things, and one of them is just this idea of what do I do with my freedom? As we look around the world right now, we see that we've emerged into another battle, many battles happening simultaneously, and that again, as is always the case in human history, a life of freedom on the outside is not a given. And we need only make a very brief study of humanity over the last few thousand years to see that this is real, that some kind of external freedom is not a given when we're born on this earth, that in fact it has to be earned. And as I consider the implications of wars in the world today, and of the different varying opinions about them, and how does this relate to us? I think in the most basic context, it is here to help us have a greater perspective. There's some automatic responses the ego can have when it starts to pan out from its own little reality, and one is to just bury its head in the sand and hope that none of these dramatics arrive at my doorstep. It's relatable enough, and at times it's even an appropriate resolution to make so we don't get too swept up into these things. But by and large, it's not helpful for us to ignore the state of the world or what's going on in it. Just as it's not helpful for us to take it on completely as this ego, we can very easily build a house of indignance where we think we know all the answers from our couch, and we judge everything else around us and get swept up into the upsets of reading the news. Instead, we have to find how to expand into a greater understanding of humanity and life in God. And for all of us in this room, I would say that that entails that we have all been given a certain gift of freedom that we should never take for granted. We have the freedom to wake up in the morning and fix ourselves a nice breakfast, to go to work, to pursue the things that we believe in this life. And yet we don't need to look very far outside of ourselves to see that not everyone has been granted this freedom. Often I've felt so much inspiration in the story of The Sound of Music and the Von Trapp family, and I've still had deepening reflections on why this is such an impactful story, and almost 100 years later, why it continues to be so popular in the consciousness of men and women everywhere. And one reflection I've had is that it's not so much that the family escaped oppression in Austria that we tell their story. There were many others who escaped. But it's what they did when they got their freedom that has made them a lasting influence and inspiration for this world. What did they do with that freedom once it was earned? The short of that story is that about 4 years after arriving at Ellis Island, there was 10 children that day. And rather than Uncle Max, there was Reverend Franz, who was the conductor and who wrote and composed the music that the family would sing. There was Maria, who in real life was just as devoted to God. And there was Captain Von Trapp, who was almost the opposite of the disciplinarian we see in the movie. And in real life, his children all said, was absolutely full of love.
And when they got to America, they had $4 in their bank account. And yet they had their freedom to pursue life, a life lived in God and not for themselves. And so after 4 years of living in Philadelphia and in the city and of realizing this can't be our path, they were taken up into the hills of Vermont. And it was here that they were able to meet a farmer whose house was falling over. And in truth, it fell over within 1 year of them getting the house. And they started a new life with many hundreds of acres in these hills. This would go on to become the Von Trapp Family Lodge. The whole family farmed, and for almost 20 years they toured the country and they sang music to people. They hosted camps every summer of singing. They had a church on the family property. Reverend Franz stayed with them. Captain Von Trapp died very soon after acquiring the land in Vermont. But the whole family was invested in this mission, and in large part through Maria, they were able to keep this focus in themselves of continuing to ask God what their life was supposed to look like and how it should manifest. They weren't confused by doubt, and they weren't lost in the desires of what they wanted out of life. And for this reason, they endeared themselves to everyone around them. They still to this day run a humongous dairy and are considered one of the best cheesemakers in Vermont. They were both grounded in the mundane of living close to nature and life and in the spiritual of really choosing how to use their freedom in this life in the right way as an offering to God. And I think about that for each one of us. Is how do we choose to use our freedom this moment, this day? What do we do with our time? What do we do with our thoughts? Very similarly to the story of the Von Trapps, we can tell the story of our master. And most everyone in this room knows that story of his coming to America in 1920. He was 27 years old. It's an incredible story for the ages. Could barely speak English. Landed in Boston. Spoke perfect English to an assembly hall of religious delegates. It took him years to keep tuning into God's vision for his life. It took him all across this country and this land, speaking to thousands upon thousands. Eventually, he arrived at Mount Washington and realized that this was the place to begin his great work and to build his colony of self-realization. This all took years, and it all took many trials and testing of every spirit. For every room of 1,000 you can imagine, he might have gotten one person to follow him. And yet that was his commitment to this world, was that he was going to sow every seed and climb every mountain and do everything that God put in front of him to serve his neighbor and to awaken this world to the presence of God and to not need to doubt anymore. It is a truly tremendous story, and it's not the only one. I read last week from the biography of Sri Yukteswar, written by another one of the disciples in his lineage. And it's amazing when we read these other biographies of Sri Yukteswar, we can forget that Sri Yukteswar was already an elder when Master came, and Master was a kid. There was a lot of life that Sri Yukteswar lived before Master had even stepped on the scene. And when we see the stories of this life, we see not a cold yogi that was removed from society and all of its ills, but we see a sage who lived and operated in this world in the most mundane ways. He was a part of almost every social institution in every town that he lived in, whether it was educational and the starting of new schools or local political governance. He started organizations to have Bhagavad Gita study sessions, and of course to disseminate the path of Kriya Yoga. He traveled to many remote villages all throughout his region and became the teacher for these villages for decades. Who have we heard speak of this? I did not know this. The point I would like to make is that for each one of us, we have our special dispensation of service to God in this world. This ashram is certainly one of those, and it comes from Master. But for each one of us, it looks unique, and it manifests uniquely as much as we are able to give ourselves completely into the faith of God's presence in our own life and be open to how that manifests in this world. This is what all the masters come to show us. There is no outer formula of the way things are have to look to love God. Rather, each saint manifests their life uniquely based on their own dharma and relationship with the divine. For all of us, this is also true. So again, we come back to this basic question which we ask ourselves is, what do I do with my freedom that I've been given? And in truth, we ask not our little self, but our highest self in God, and we allow ourselves to be swept up into that potential, into God's vision for our life. When I asked Peony yesterday, is there anything that, any theme that you feel would be good to talk about tomorrow? And she got quiet for a moment and she said, how do we tune into God's will? And I thought about this, and especially in the context of this theme, which has already been percolating in my mind, is what do I do with my freedom? Well, how do we tune into God's will? It requires a kind of dynamic and living relationship inside of ourself that can't be manufactured on the outside. It can't be promoted by the ego or by an organization. It has to be an authentic, sincere, loving relationship with God that exists in truth and in the highest version of itself every moment of every day. That we are constantly open, and here's the real essential part, that we are constantly listening. Sometimes it is that we start to get a seed of inspiration, and we get excited because we know that this came from God. And just about the moment that we get excited, we claim the seed for ourselves, and we stop listening. And in truth, this is the exact moment that we cut ourselves off from God's will. Because even if we can know a larger direction something is going in, we have stopped listening. Instead, if that scenario happens and we get a seed of that inspiration, we immediately say, this is your seed, God. I'll do whatever I can to water it. I'll do whatever I can to take care of it and keep it warm so that it can germinate and grow into the plant of your realization. But we don't allow ourselves to get in the way. This idea of how do we tune into God's will is also stated as, how do I maintain my living relationship with God all the time? And to do that, we learn to listen ever and always. And listening happens In all ways, we listen to those that we trust on the outside. We listen to the guru and anything that he or she would share with us. We listen to the people God has put in our life and what they're saying. What's the essence of what they're trying to share? What's God's purpose in them expressing it in this way? And every morning and every night, and as often as we can throughout the day, we listen from within ourselves for any thought, any feeling that God would put in us that would steer us in a certain direction. Now this is an unbelievable adventure when we learn how to do this. It takes all the fear out of life. It takes all the pride out of life also, because we realize to have this kind of relationship, there can be no Zach. Just like Yogananda said, I killed him a long time ago. There can be no little self which wants to come in and make proclamations, wants to figure it all out. A commitment to God's will is a perpetual commitment to tuning in anew all the time, ever new attunement with God's presence. But we don't also have to make this some complicated abstraction which takes it away from our own power right now. We start by having faith of His presence, and we move forward with simple baby steps, and we feel our way through it like we're learning to walk. We take one step in a direction, and if it feels good, we take another. If it feels off, we think, let me tune into this. God, help me understand. It's about the time that we ask, we step back and we say, God, help me understand that our phone rings, or that somebody sends us a message and we get the exact answer we need, and it's because we asked. We may not have even heard the phone ring or received the message if we hadn't stopped to ask. And before we know it, we can take 10 steps in the wrong direction, make a big mess, and have to spend the next 2 weeks cleaning it up. This is the game that we're all playing. But we don't need to make this heavy. We don't need to feel like this is something that is beyond our capabilities. Because in truth, it is the natural functioning of God's intelligence, of God's wills and God's ways inside of us all the time. And as Master said, when the doubt is gone, and when we let go of all this doubtingness, it is simply what's been happening in our life as long as our life has existed. It is God's presence now and always. And as we lean into this, and as we trust this, we can learn, we can grow, we can navigate difficulties and challenges and keep our hearts open. Most importantly, we can always keep our third ear open. There's the line in Lincoln where Seward's saying, "Are you even listening to me?" And Lincoln says, "I am, with all three of my ears." And I love that, because for all of us, as we're swept up in the drama of life, it's so easy to think we know. We know this person, we know how they act, we know everything. We figured it out. But in fact, we limit God when we do that. If we keep that third ear open, that's the ear that's always listening for God's message inside of every experience. That's always listening for God's words inside of someone else. Even if that person is mad at us, we're always listening for God. In all these ways, we find that our life becomes a living testimony to His presence, that our greatest dharma is just to be an observer of how God lives, breathes, and works in this world. And so for each one of us, when I ask this rhetorical question of, what do I do with my freedom? There is no higher path than the integration of God's consciousness and God's love into our own very self all the time, and everything which comes and goes, every work that we take up and then eventually let go of, all of these things is just a natural manifestation of our relationship with God. We're not attached. We're not afraid. We trust. Yesterday, or it was 2 days ago, I was talking to someone on the porch, and she was reporting to me the concern someone else had been expressing of us dropping the Stanwood market. And saying, I think I really need to talk to Zach because this is crazy. But, you know, the decisions always seem to work. But this one is just crazy. I think I need to talk to him. And that made me laugh. It's not my decision. This is something God's been working on me for over a year of listening. Every time Dirty Old Town played while we stood at that market, I thought, God, why do you keep playing this song? This is the wonderful adventure in Ram that we're all given, is that he is constantly speaking to us and guiding this life. And the more that this becomes our own commitment to freedom, we have been given the freedom. What do we do with it? We listen. We listen and we love. We love as God loves. And we listen for him in all things, in all ways. And in this we find there can be no doubt. Because perpetually and constantly he is guiding us in all ways. And in this our faith grows. It grows stronger. It grows to a place where we can forget about ourselves. I was so taken by Mother's language in my last journal when she would emphasize over and over, love God more than you love yourself. And what a easy thing to say, but what a difficult thing to practice. But this is what we do when we have faith and we're not worried about ourselves. We step into every situation as a servant. We look around at everything with eyes to see, how can I help? Sometimes our method of helping is just to keep our peace. It's not doing anything at all, so it doesn't mean we force ourselves in a situation or try to make it something. We need to listen to help. We need to be sensitive to God's guidance to help. And anything we do outside of that, we learn there are natural repercussions. So a lot of time we spend sopping up the spilled milk of those repercussions. But that's okay. This is how we learn. As we have acceptance for ourselves in that process and for everyone else as they go through that process, we realize it's all God. It's only God. I was really enjoying yesterday just stepping back from my own life. It's such a wonderful treat to not be engaged outwardly. And it so happened that many Saturdays in the last couple months, I've had the opportunity to do that with the friendship of all of you to support me in doing that. And I thought, well, what am I going to do with my freedom? I don't have to go participate on the outside today. And what am I going to do with it? That is the question. And I found myself, as I really gave myself permission to lean into that freedom, that I could sit with Master, and I could sit in the presence of Sri Yukteswar, not to try to pepper them with questions, not to try to make it something that Zach wants it to be, but just as a calm feeling. A calm feeling of their presence in my life. And just about as soon as I gave myself permission to feel their presence, I'm taken down that rabbit hole of how Master has been involved with every step of my spiritual life. How can I doubt? At every juncture, he has been there to guide me and to provide for me. At every time I hit a crossroads where fear or unknowing would arise, he was always there to help me set the sails in the right direction again. Sometimes that was to drop the sail entirely and say, we don't need to go anywhere right now. Let's just sit here. But always when we reflect on our life, we see this. When we reflect with eyes of impersonality, where we're not attached, we're free. And when we look at our life with the eyes of freedom, we can't but see the presence of the Masters guiding us in all ways and at all times. And this is the feeling that they put in my heart, was just of their presence now and always. And this is the promise for each one of us, that when we're ready for that presence, when we stop the doubting and the games, it's already here and now. And so as we celebrate this Sabbath morning, we are sandwiched between our two great masters. We have tomorrow of Sri Yukteswar's day to look forward to, but we have this moment. We're the cream of this Oreo. Let's rejoice. Let our hearts be full of gratitude. There's nothing else to do, nothing else to try to be. We just get to be the cream. I'd like to ask Brother Bhima if he has any song fit for the occasion to play it for us when he's ready.
What makes a man? in the city, and leaving his comfortable life.
Of us have been singing that song this week. It's a new song Bhima shared just in the last week. And I guess it was last Thursday when I picked up Leo. I'll often play him songs in the car. And I played, he said he wanted to listen to a song, and I said, how about we listen to a Bhima song? And I turned one on, and about halfway through the song he said, another one. I need a different song. So you don't like this one? He said, another one. So I turned on the song that Bhima just played. And about halfway through it, I looked in the rearview mirror and saw his face, and he was lit up. I said, you like this one, Leo? And he said, yeah, this is the one. I think he really liked the do-do-do-do. So why don't we take this moment to, again, just feel the presence of the Masters with us in our hearts and in our mind. So easy to imagine Master in our heart, all of his great love, his great service to all of us and to humanity, and Sri Yukteswar in our mind, the clarity of his perception, the immediacy of his faith in our very self. And let us make this our offering to this world, to all those we wish to pray for this morning. Allowing God to place in your mind's eye all those who are yours to pray for. each and all of these souls up in the peace and sweetness of God's presence. Let's pray together, Divine Mother.
Divine Mother,
thou art omnipresent.
Thou art
in all these children. Manifest your loving presence.
Manifest your loving presence
in these bodies.
In these bodies.
In these minds.
In these minds.
And in these souls.
And in these souls.
Oh.
Happy Sabbath, everyone.
Thank you.
Unpublished Master Talks.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It says Patanjali on the top, so... Obviously, he doesn't talk about Patanjali at all. Yeah. It's pretty tremendous.
There's a transcript, I guess. Like a typewriter.
Yeah, yeah. The dated one there, though. May 5th. When is Sri Yukteswar's birthday?
May 10th. But Rajasi is May 5th.
Oh, that's what it is. Wow.
Maybe there was a part at the end. He says, we'll have some cake for St. Lynn.
If there isn't, we can imagine this.
Yeah. St. Lynn will say a few words. He can't say anything.
After the typist stuff.
Yeah, this doesn't end with that.
For the record.
Yeah. Makes me, the talk made me feel better whenever I feel like I'm being repetitive with my points.
For sure. I love it.
It's just like ding, 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 ding. Like, I will keep saying this.
Why do you?
So helpful.
Yeah.
How did you first hear about Master?
I would say through Glinda. Because she was a part of Ananda, and through her I had a copy of Autobiography of a Yogi when I was in the Sierra. And so then it just became very, I mean, I even had it before that, and when I lived in Los Angeles, but when I was in the Sierra, it really became like a living presence. I could only read like a paragraph at a time, maybe a page. That's all that I wanted, like, and I knew everything was true, but it was never like about getting the knowledge, it was the feeling always in it that it had for me. And then I really feel like from the moment we went to the Sierra the first time, Master just took charge of my life. And then I found out later the trailer I had found on Craigslist was on the base of Mount Washington, and I didn't know Mount Washington was there at the time. And it was could have been anywhere in the Los Angeles area. And it was just very, I mean, maybe that's a coincidence. Yeah.
Don't doubt.
Yeah. But then it just became a tangible feeling that he was in charge of everything. And the second summer, it was a tangible feeling of, I know I'm supposed to start a nature farm and build a community. And it was just a knowing that all came from him. I had all this understanding of the vision of what it was like before I had ever seen any of his talks or knew anything about it, about what he said specifically. It was like 8 years into the farm that the talk, How to Be Happy and Blissful All the Time, fell off of Dambara's shelf. And he brought it to morning meditation one morning and read from it. And I was like, I don't know what that is, but I need that. And it was like the blueprint for this place specifically.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think for any place that wants to do that, sure. But it was always the blueprint. It was just on the inside. And then it finally arrived as an outer confirmation of tangible things he said.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was how it all began, was through Autobiography. But it was just his living presence, that picture. That picture was just around. And I just was always thinking about him. And then, because he always prayed to Divine Mother, I started just in myself relating to God as Divine Mother. I had always had a problem relating in the Christian way because I grew up in the Christian evangelical, very Lord God the Father, very justice-oriented and indignant and angry. And then when Master spoke of Divine Mother, it was like, well, there's another aspect to God that I didn't know about. And it made it really easy for me to believe that God could be in my life helping me. So that was through him also. But yeah, this was part of what I was getting to experience. was these kind of things, just the understanding of how they all came through him, mm-hmm. through his consciousness. And now we all sit here and it's, you know, found David through Master.
Mm-hmm.
It's all just his thing. So, and it is that way for all of us.
Am I remembering it correctly that you and Peyote arrived at the vow of simplicity and then when you looked into it, there was a talk where Master said you should all take a vow of simplicity. You're like, oh.
Yeah, well, I actually Googled it trying to find the exact language for the Simple Living Manifesto around when he says go north, south, east, and west.
Oh, right, yes.
And then I just, like, in that, ended up on a webpage for one of the organizations, I don't even know which one, and the last sentence of it was, and I want you all to take a vow of simplicity to live this way.
Yeah.
And it was like, we had gotten up at like 4 a.m. and sat at the table and just known it was the morning the vow was done and we needed to finalize it. And then that we like read it and we were like, oh my gosh, like this is just his thing. It's not ours. You know?
I seem to recall it was on the Ananda website, webpage.
Okay. Great. So whatever Ron wants
yeah.
it to be.
Yeah.
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 That makes sense. Yeah. But yeah, it's every one of the steps has been his prompting. And
mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I'm wired in a lot like Mother's Mold. I don't want an organization. And I had to learn to have my piece of being in one without being one
mm-hmm.
myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Finding the piece of that. So.
Mm-hmm.
But I also see why Master did what he did and why we, to even exist, have had to make the choices we've had. And I think Mother forgives us.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
She knows where our heart is around it.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have any interest in that part of it. So.
Mm-hmm.
Other than how it can help facilitate our own clarity and depth for the path and what we're doing here with our freedom. Yeah, I've told many of you, at one point I, very early on, and when I was like, seemed like we were going towards Ananda, that I went back and visited my parents, and I was in St. Louis. This was after the second season on the mountains, and it was my birthday, and I was in the room I grew up on on my birthday. And somehow I had gotten onto the Ananda site, and I came across for the first time the lawsuits. And it was very jarring, because we were already going in this direction. I had met the spiritual directors of Ananda Washington and had embraced that this was Master's plan for me. And then I just was like a huge gut punch. I was just down. It completely made me question everything. And for that night, I remember I could not fall asleep. I was spinning. And I needed to understand, like, is this really your will for us that we would be a part of this? There's so much negativity. This is so dark. I don't want to be associated with this in any way. And I felt sick, and I was by myself. Haley was in Washington, and I had to like figure out the answer for myself. And I stayed up that night meditating and praying harder than I probably ever prayed at that time, more sincerely. And then Master came into the space, and he laughed the most unbelievable laugh, pure joy. And he put his hand in between my shoulder blades, and he went like this. And my heart popped open, and I felt all of his joy flood me, and I knew it was okay, that this is what I needed to do. And so I've always had an interesting relationship with Ananda. Master literally pushed me through the doors. I fully accepted it at that point, and, you know, obviously did so much within the organization and to serve Master, but it was always for Master that I was there. It was never for the church.
Yeah.
And he made that really clear from the beginning that was my purpose in being there. But yeah, he was
he was all laughter. He was all happiness about all of it. So it shows us that on the other side, this stuff isn't so serious. It isn't. It is unfortunate in some ways, and it's not what we should be focused on here. But on the other side, everything is made whole, and he was already in sharing the bliss with me when I came face to face with the ugliness of this world. So. I think because of that too, it was especially difficult for of myself for me to choose any direction that would have taken me out of Ananda, because he had put me in Ananda.
Yeah.
And I was very committed to what I've still, whatever he wants me to do is going to be. I'm really dense and he knows that. I won't change directions until I know for sure he's making it clear for me. And sometimes I think I'm too dense.
Yeah.
But it's how I am. I just have to know. I'm from Missouri. You gotta show me. I can't make it up. I have to know the truth. So once I know, then I'll do anything. Whatever he wants it to be. So
I'm hearing that story for the first time again. Third year.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a wonderful master. Yeah, Sri Yukteswar is his own. I think we probably all feel our own affinity with Sri Yukteswar and closeness. And it was something that never really made sense, especially where we came from. The narrative around Sri Yukteswar was just, he's so difficult and he was so hard, like you would have never lasted 2 minutes with Sri Yukteswar, kind of a thing. And maybe, but somehow I always just felt this unbelievable love for him. And then the first time I read where David had stated Sri Yukteswar and what he said to Master when he came back after his resurrection, during the resurrection, was like, I won't correct you anymore. Like, it's all love.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we have to be able to differentiate the form the master takes on in the lifetime and the consciousness, which is not limited to that form. And maybe Sri Yukteswar will give us a slap on the wrist, but if you really tune into him, there is immense love pouring forth from Sri Yukteswar for all of us. And I've often had the feeling, whether it's true or not, doesn't matter, that myself and many of us were children in Sri Yukteswar's ashram, but we were just children because he had a lot of boys around. And whether it's true or not doesn't matter. It makes him closer.
Yeah.
So it is true for me that's my relationship with him. And is one of his little boys.
I feel like he's a patron saint in some ways, as we've been able to have the freedom to commit ourselves more to serving locally in this Kamedo community, and how just involved he was on all these different civic duties. And,
it's really the unrealized history of Sri Yukteswar in the West. I think we relate to him at the end when he had a couple ashrams and was much older, but he was so involved with every level of life and wherever God put him. And he was so open and receptive. The whole controversies around not being loyal to your guru. You read the life of Sri Yukteswar, he wanted darshan with every saint. And he was respectful and listened to all of them. Was he disloyal to Lahiri? That's almost absurd that we would say that. And even in this biography, it made an interesting point that when he was made a swami, which was well after Lahiri was his guru, he was made a swami in the Giri order, and that required him to take a guru in that order. That's like the organizational guru. And only the human mind would draw these lines and say, you can't do this, you can't do that. But even in his life, you see, like, he had an organizational guru that gave him, that put him a part of that branch to be a swami. Lahiri wasn't. But that didn't, does that mean he's disloyal to Lahiri? Like, what are we talking about? You know, we have to let God's plan manifest in our lives
as it's inspired by God and not conform that to pictures of masters on a wall,
mm-hmm.
you know, and the rules that are created to sit with those pictures. But yeah, it's so inspiring to read. I feel so much in common with our journey and Sri Yukteswar's life, because
mm-hmm.
we're not probably world travelers to lecture on. Who knows? I don't want to say any of you don't have the Dharma, but you know, I think the compulsion we have is to be the holistic life model,
yeah.
and to represent that for the world by doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel in so many ways that's what Sri Yukteswar was really committed to, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, just being discovered almost.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But he had many, he had a number of ashrams, which I didn't realize,
mm-hmm.
all for different age groups and different stages of life.
Wow.
It's like he was so holistic.
Wow.
Yeah.
What, how old or what age was he when he started all of those? I know he had a family and was married. And
yeah, by
children.
In the biography it says by the time he was 29, his wife had passed away. And it seems like it was like his family life basically got released by the time he was in his 30s, which was news to me. And at that point, he became fully enmeshed in the pursuit of the divine and then traveled like far and wide to meet all the sages of the area. And then in the same way, heard about Lahiri and went to visit. Tells a really beautiful story of how that first night when he went to visit Lahiri, he just sat in the back in silence the whole time for hours. And then at the very end, everybody had been leaving. Everybody's leaving, and it's just Sri Yukteswar in that room. And then they met and had the knowing of who they were for each other. And the author posits that Sri Yukteswar's coming was the coming of the one who would actually be the main propagationist of Kriya Yoga, was through Sri Yukteswar. And you know, if we look at Master's Link, it came through Sri Yukteswar, of course. So, but they were relating to it as the alignment of the stars for him to even come to Lahiri. And I thought that's a really wonderful thought. But you know, he was going to Lahiri just as he had to all the other saints. But then in Lahiri, he saw the one who had learned all the lessons he needed and could take him all the way. And he would visit regularly. He would come and just sit in the back and most of the time be silent, but sometimes Lahiri would ask him to share some thoughts and to go deeper. And Sri Yukteswar was one of two disciples that started doing commentary on the Gita. And I think in a lot of ways he actually pushed that aside so the other disciple could be the primary one to be known as the one doing the Gita commentaries. But, you know, in that way all the disciples have their own dynamics with a master, so. Yeah, the chapter I had just read, this is the book I keep referring to last night. It's Sri Yukteswar's passing, and it just documents from Sri Yukteswar's perspective, the pain he had when Master did not come see him when he was supposed to at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And Master had come back to India and then was given the name, he gave him the name Paramahansa. And then Master went off on his journey and was doing lectures and wanted to go to the Kumbh Mela. And Sri Yukteswar sent him a message and said, I need you to come here tomorrow. You must come. And Sri Yukteswar waited and waited. Master didn't come. And then Sri Yukteswar left. And Master was devastated. But this disciple says that Sri Yukteswar was actually devastated. That he went into a total state of falling, basically. And being totally, his heart was broken. That Master didn't come when he was supposed to come. And he said it lasted for like a day. And then Sri Yukteswar had an obligation that next night, and he was supposed to go speak at an event. And he got back into himself, and he's a master. And he went to the event, and it said he like wooed everyone, and was his regular self again. And then he left the next day. So it was very intense. But that gives you context too for how difficult it was for Master then when Sri Yukteswar was gone and he hadn't chosen to go back when he asked him to. It was like Sri Yukteswar took that on initially. And then he said, okay, I'm done. And then he handed it over and Master had to feel it. And that's not saying these things with any kind of judgment. It's them embracing their humanity for us.
Yeah.
And they're avatars. And yet they're totally human when they come in, so for us.
Wow.
And but it's really interesting to think about the pain they must have felt in that separation at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And the joy when Sri Yukteswar came back for him.
So a view of it in the humanness that's so much more enriching than the narrative that the avatar is just pretending to have emotions.
That, yeah.
Just can't stand that.
Yeah, it's a hard one. But you can see we have to relate to it from where we're at. And that's like a baby step.
Yeah.
Avatar just entered the room.